Thank you, Bernie. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here with you this afternoon. And if you promise not to tell my boss, I will tell you that I maybe sneak online every day around noon and enter the Hamilton lottery, because even though I saw it off Broadway, I feel like I'm not really seeing it with all the Broadway buzz. So I don't know if anybody's seen it on Broadway, but if you have, come tell me about it afterwards. I heard they changed some choreography and stuff. All right, so using social listening to create cross-channel content. It's what we at Teach for America refer to as our content loop, and it's how we learn about our audiences, listen to them, and give them what they always knew they always wanted, so that we are in turn creating valuable content that leads to an engaged audience, and it's how we do our content marketing. So I work at Teach for America, and Bernie gave a great introduction. I oversee our social media, our video team, our website editorial team, and our email team. And we're really working hard on interconnecting our digital ecosystem so that we don't operate in silos, so that the user experience is really unified, no matter where you're talking to us or how you're experiencing us. But this being the Social Media Strategy Summit, I'm really gonna focus in on social media for this conversation. And let me just tell you a little bit about my social media team. They oversee 7 national channels. And the paid ads team oversees advertisements on about 11 different properties. And we help provide strategy and content for an additional 400 accounts associated with Teach for America across the brand at different tiers of the brand. So without further ado, let me tell you a little bit about what Teach for America is.
America's education system should provide all children with opportunity. Opportunity to succeed, to thrive, to pursue their dreams.
We'll see if we can get this moving again.
America's education system should provide all children with opportunity. Opportunity to succeed, to thrive, to pursue their dreams. But depending on where a child is born, these opportunities may not exist. The opportunity to succeed ceases to be a universal right. The opportunity to thrive is based on things like race and class. And those dreams fall through the cracks of an unfair system. For too many children, their zip code becomes their destiny. But at Teach for America, we've seen too much progress to believe that your education has to be determined by where you live. And it's our mission to help our nation deliver on its promise so that every child has access to the same opportunities and choices. We recruit a group of diverse thinkers and leaders, recent college graduates, and successful professionals, people of all backgrounds. And we prepare and support these leaders to be strong teachers and immerse them in classrooms that need them the most, where they can inspire students and work together with educators, families, and communities to push kids toward their dreams. But we know that our schools are part of a larger system. So after 2 years, our teachers have a choice. They can stay in education and continue to have a profound impact, or they can move on to another career path and lead in other ways that help kids and our country as advocates, innovators, policymakers, and entrepreneurs. And as our network continues to grow, our alumni help build a movement working passionately for students and communities so that all children have the opportunities they deserve. Good for kids, good for everyone. Change and be changed. Teach for America.
All right, well, that video explains us a little bit better than I can. So the digital marketing team at Teach for America has 3 charges. The first charge is brand awareness and affinity, getting people to understand what educational equity is, that it's an issue, and that we are here to fix that issue. The second charge is recruitment. We look for a new core of teachers every year, so we are always looking for teachers. And our third charge is donor loyalty. So the question at the forefront of our minds always is, how do we get our audience to talk to us? And we really interpret that, how do we get our audience to talk to us, as what the C-suite means when they say to me, Stacy, how can you make a piece of content that goes viral? And I don't know if any of you have heard that question from your management team, but the word viral kind of makes me shudder because it's so hard to deliver on. But I really think that what they're saying is, how do we get our audience to talk to us? How do we know what they care about? And it's knowing what they care about, knowing what they want to talk about, is essential to developing great content, and it's essential to developing the content that gets shared. So for a long time, we would sit back and think about the fact that the thing we knew most about our audience was they loved what we were curating for them. They like the BuzzFeed. They like the Upworthy. They like the things of that sort that were really in our lane. So we gave them a lot of that, and we got a ton of engagement. But we would sit around and lament, like, what does this engagement mean, and what is it really doing for us, and how is it helping our brand? And frankly, we were a little hurt about how many clicks we were sending to BuzzFeed, because I don't really think BuzzFeed needed my help in getting any more clicks. So we really wanted them to stay with us if they were ultimately going to take action, and we thought about how can we develop a brand publishing house in-house. So when we began to think about how would we run our own brand publishing, we kept focusing, and this was really 2 years ago, we kept focusing on all this talk about, like, people aren't reading newspapers anymore, they're getting their news from their Facebook timelines, and people are getting news from brands, and BuzzFeed is out there changing the way people are talking. And we didn't believe that the newspaper was dead, but we knew that it was changing, and we felt that there were a lot of lessons to be learned in watching how it evolved and how people are consuming content, is the phrase I'm looking for. So we found ourselves in the position where we were wrestling with the same challenges we felt like newspapers were wrestling with, in the sense of, like, how do we create an experience and deliver the news as we see it and the news our audience is interested in hearing in a way that they will engage with us instead of engaging with all the other immense choices that they had. So we created our own branded content stream to sort of rival these secondary clickbait sources as we saw them, and we became our own brand publishing house. But we really based it, as we were watching all this evolve, we watched what publishers did to evolve in the space and stay relevant. And our goal was to sort of mimic them, and what we thought they did so well was that they really became local to their readers, and it really became reader-focused and really about the audience, and we try to do that too. We really focus in on who's our audience, what's our user, and what are they looking for, because we knew if we could deliver in that niche that we could compete with what some of the other brands are doing. So in the past 2 years, we've gone from having about 200,000 followers on our social networks to well over 600,000 followers across our social media channels. Most of these are garnered organically. They were hard fought for, they matter, and we need to know what they want and give it to them. And that was really the listening part of our digital engagement. So brand publishing and listening aren't enough, right? It needs to be part of a larger strategy. And you need to know what you're talking about and why, so that you can relate it back to your larger mission statement about what Teach for America is all about, what that first video was all about. And we call this strategy our content North Star. You like me? Okay. My PowerPoint is frozen. Who has any? Okay, let's try this again. There we go. Okay. So thank you for bearing with me. Okay, so the content North Star underlies everything that we do. And everything else, all of our other strategies orbit this. So we really, even though it seems like it's not where we always start with listening. What do we know about our audience? What are they talking about? What do they care about? We use that as an idea upon which to generate content. We publish and amplify that content, and then we listen and iterate it again so that we keep circling this loop. And I think we are all probably using this loop in some form at some point in time, and I think we all know sometimes this loop spins very slowly when we're working on a really long-term campaign, and sometimes it spins really quickly every night. And we really want to think about who our audiences are when we're doing this. So this is our North Star. I'm going to just read it to you. Our North Star is that we publish personal, clear, and relevant content that ignites conversations and makes diverse audiences feel confident about their commitment, empowered to take action, connected to Teach for America, and engaged in the movement for educational equity. And we really do a gut check every time we put up a piece of content, like, does it align with our content North Star? I see a couple people taking photos, so I'm just going to give them a second. All right. So I've said a couple times that it's about giving your audience what they want, and we stand that as being 100% true, but it's not always about what the audience wants, because in this extremely easy example, like, we're not just going to give them kittens and babies and puppies all day long, and I know we've all been in that boat. We're thinking it might solve some of our problems. So we know that we need to balance what we want with what our added value is, our North Star, and we think about that for all of our audiences, because we have so many audiences. We have the teachers we're trying to recruit. We have our teachers that are in classrooms. We have alumni in a variety of fields. We have donors. And we really want to make sure we are giving them the content that they desire in our lane from our brand. And we want to be a little bit careful that maybe we're not giving the people that don't like us so much stuff that feeds their beast, because it's a little bit of a different beast, because Teach for America works in education reform in the United States. And some days I admit I go home thinking of that Jack Johnson song, "Where Did All the Good People Go?" It gets a little contentious out there on the internet from time to time. And the haters are out there, and our supporters hear them. And part of what we believe we need to do to live out our content North Star is to help our audience feel proud of their commitment and inspire to take action. And a lot of that from time to time is about giving them the context of what's going on and why, and giving some context to the haters. So this was really awesome, but Howard Dean actually wrote a whole piece about education reform, and he ended up doing this whole long talk about Teach for America. We didn't know it was coming out, but he really came to our defense about why what we're doing matters and that it is making a difference in low-income communities. And our engagement around this piece skyrocketed. We really track our mentions in our social listening software. It was one of the, you could just feel the relief of our audience and hearing somebody else say what they wanted to say when they hear these critical responses. So I think it's such a valuable thing in your listening to think about, like, yes, you're hearing your haters, and yes, you have a strategy for them, but you're not the only one hearing your haters. So I love thinking about how can you give context to it without feeding into it and feeding the beast. And sometimes it comes from the third party, and that we didn't hesitate to put the third party response up on our platforms. And this really helped our haters, our own audience, the people that we love, the people who like believe that our mission is powerful, because it helped them see through the hate and find the love. And how do you do that, right? Like, how do you get through the context of everything else going on in the world? How do you feel the love? How do you make your audience feel loved? For us, we used to talk a lot about the golden rule, right? Like, treat other people the way you want to be treated. And we sort of had this aha, and we said, no, that's not right. Like, we are not about the golden rule. We are about the platinum rule. And the platinum rule is treat others as they wish to be treated. And this small shift in our thinking actually became this very cataclysmic shift, because as we started doing that in our customer service response and really thinking about who we were talking to and what they wanted, we really saw great engagement around our brand turnaround. So we really spent a lot of time thinking about that through social listening. Treat others the way they want to be treated. So along that line, right, we know that they want to be proud of their commitment. We know they want to have fun. Everybody likes feeling loved. This is a series of emoji grids we made for Valentine's Day. We made a whole bunch of different ones that we released throughout the day for a whole different series of teachers. This is for our STEM teachers. If you're not familiar with that acronym, it is Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. And this actually came from our social listening. There was a lot of chatter going on online in the teaching audiences about what they were going to do for Valentine's Day in their classroom around Valentine's. And through our listening, we kept noticing that all of our teachers were using, frankly, depending on what subject they were talking about, our STEM teachers kept using the rocket ship and the microscope emoji over and over and over again. So we were looking at a way to sort of wink and a nod. We're listening to you, we're hearing you, we're hearing what you're saying in your language, and serve it back to them. So these Valentines went through the roof for us, and it was really a piece of content directly from our social listening. All right, so how do we know how our audience wants to be treated? We do it in two ways at Teach for America. We have a classic brand marketing insights team. They develop brand personas, they have insights, they're really working on understanding our people and what would make someone want to join TFA, what would make someone want to give money. And then we do it through our social listening. We use real-time listening, we use Radian 6, or Social Studio as it is now turned over. But we also stalk our users on other channels. We listen to what they're saying, we listen in on relevant hashtags. We are in the teaching subreddit every single day. What are you talking about? What do you care about? Is something going on we might want to make a piece of content around? And I am more and more amazed, I think, as the more we've been in Reddit, at how many outlets now start their pieces. Like, Reddit users are saying, and like, here are the theories from Reddit users. If you start paying attention to it, you'll start to see it everywhere, that people are really culling a lot of content from Reddit. So speaking of content from Reddit, my next slide is a video that I'm going to show you, but it's going to autoplay, so I'm just going to set it up before we get there, that we made entirely from social listening and, frankly, from Reddit. So it's our November doldrums video, and what this came from is we know that November is really hard, especially on our first-year teachers, because the idealism has sort of worn off a little bit and reality has set in, and they are just starting to realize how hard it's going to be to get their students to achieve all the hopes and dreams they have for their students. And we know a little bit from our stalking that most of our teachers had a crush on Taylor Kitsch, and you might think that's a little irrelevant, but you tell me whether or not you think that's irrelevant after you see the video.
September 29th. When did the anticipation of back to school turn to the resignation of late September? To think I was once excited to get back to things like lunch duty, class transitions, and decorative Kitsch. No, not Taylor. Teacher Kitsch. Planning and grading leave little time for walking Hogarth. He glares at me from the living room carpet, plotting his revenge.
Good boy.
I pretend not to notice. Meanwhile, my weekends consist of ice cream and YouTube. During cute puppy videos, I sometimes allow myself the luxury of an ugly cry before passing out unceremoniously. October 15th. Some days my competition with the classroom clock grows dire. Other days it's all I can do to make it to the dismissal bell untarnished by the hazards of the workplace. My non-teacher friends taunt me with weekend invitations to luxuries like dinner and movies. I tell them to have fun without me. But secretly I judge them. November 6th. The days grow short, the wind grows cold, and the sun is a distant stranger. Caffeine is losing its potency. Note to self, increase coffee intake to 3 cups daily. Also, buy more mugs. Another faculty meeting. It's a miracle that anyone can stay awake for these things. Sundays are my only day for rest. The rest of the laundry, the rest of the dishes, the rest of the grading. November 21st. Friday, and what's more, the Friday before fall vacation. With the relief of a full night's sleep so near, I've scarcely been so pleased that, well, winter is coming. I had my students compose letters of gratitude in anticipation of the holiday recess. Imagine my surprise to discover that many were addressed to me. My favorite reads, "Dear Mister, thank you for your hard work. Your class is my favorite. P.S. You seem tired. Get some rest." I think I will. For a few days at least. Then it's back to the teacher life, which is, though difficult this time of year, filled with the most unexpected joy.
So fun fact about that video, we did script it. Most of the lines we lifted maybe from Reddit or Instagram or things of that sort, but that is actually one of our teachers that acted in the video for us. So very cool. Okay, so the fun of my job, and I mean this sincerely, and I think maybe everybody who works in social media can relate, is that I never know what each day will bring. Some of the days are about our proactive content, our Emojigram Valentines and our November Doldrums videos, and other days are about reacting to what's happening in the rest of the world. But we know those reactive moments are going to make our content loop spin quickly, and we know that that's when our content catches fire. So this is a story from People Magazine. This is my first example of a catching fire moment. So when the 2014 school year began, People Magazine ran a story on Ricardo Silva. He was a former Carolina Panther. And as he was ending his relationship with the Carolina Panthers, as his contract was coming to an end, he joined Teach for America. He went through our interview process and was accepted as a first-year teacher. And now you can imagine that with People Magazine, it didn't really take much effort to make something catch fire. Let's just keep it real here. They did a lot of the heavy lifting for me, and I thank them dearly for that. But what happened next speaks to the power of when you do catch fire and when you do have content that speaks correctly to your audience. So the weekend leading up to the Super Bowl this past year, our listening told us that people were really interested in Ricardo's thoughts. And you might recall that the Carolina Panthers were playing the Broncos this year. So we knew that they were really interested in the thoughts of, like, what did it mean not to be in the Super Bowl? Like, what did it mean to be in a classroom? How is being in the classroom like winning a Super Bowl? What did you learn that would translate? We actually knew that our teachers' students would care about that too. So our website, the listening really picked up the weekend of the Super Bowl, and our website editorial team looked in our CRM and found his phone number and called him quickly and said, like, would you mind a last minute? Like, we know it's Saturday morning, but like, we could get it up. So we did it last minute. We put it up. We released it moments before the Super Bowl. This is one of our biggest pieces of content this year. And it really speaks to having the right piece of content at the right time in the right moment. And truth be told, no one on my team, none of the 11 people, made the connection that Ricardo Silva was a Carolina Panther and that they were in the Super Bowl. It was actually our audience tweeting stuff into us that they remembered it. So your audience is often a better memory than you are, and they will keep it there. So another example, providing value to your audience. Like, great content is valuable. So Malala, right, again, pop culture right in the moment, but they were offering free DVDs to educators, so that was incredibly valuable to our audience. It was a perk that was really relevant to them, and us finding this and making it really accessible to them, something they may not have found on their own, again, really relevant content, looking for, like, what are you hoping you're finding anyways? So I'm getting a little sticky here today. Let's try this again. So I am known for saying at Teach for America, your audience always knows what they always want. I don't believe in your audience never knows what they want. I think if you listen really well, they're telling you what they want to hear, and that's when you really deliver great content for them. So this is one of my favorite examples. A lot of people know Jim Foley as a journalist that was beheaded by ISIS about two summers ago. We actually know him as James Foley, 1996. Teacher in Phoenix. So when the news of what happened to him with ISIS broke, we called his family and asked if it would be all right if we put a memorial statement up on our Facebook and Twitter that our audience might like to celebrate him. So we did. We posted the statement. And I wanted to just, I always include that bit about asking the family first, because we never want to be seen, and I know everyone in this room agrees, as taking advantage of moments. So there are times other things have happened and the family has said no, and we've always honored that. So I'm proud of that fact. We realized really quickly that there was a large audience that wanted to remember James Foley as their teacher, not as a journalist. We actually ended up creating a Storify of these memories and sharing that again. It was one of our most popular pieces of content because we gave our audience a spot to have the memories they wanted to have that was maybe lacking elsewhere, and because people had moved over the years, it was a chance to reconnect and mourn their loss. What was really amazing about this was we have another alum, a female alum, who was looking at our Facebook page, and she said when she saw the news of ISIS, the name rang a bell, but she didn't quite know why. Well, it turns out that James Foley had been her teacher in Phoenix, and that she was a really disgruntled 14-year-old, that she kept feeling like everybody she was studying didn't represent her. And Jim really took this to heart, and he came back to class, held her after class, and said, if you want to, you can stay after class every day after school, and I'll read Drown with you. Drown has characters, Drown by Junot Diaz, Drown has characters that look like you, that represent your community, your family, your history. So Jim and the student did. She kept Jim's copy of Drown, and when she saw the news, she remembered it. Actually, she, it turns out, became a Teach for America teacher in Jim, like sort of following Jim's path, and had passed his copy of Drown through a few students. So she tracked down Jim's old copy, mailed it back to the family. She wrote a story for us about how meaningful it was that Jim had sort of changed her life with this book. We shared the story again, and Junot Diaz actually found it on his own and shared it on his own wall. So it was just a really great way, again, when you really listen and you respond to what your audience wants, the content keeps coming back to you over and over and over again, and you really continue to serve your audience well. And I think that's when you see the perks of you seamlessly show up on somebody else's wall. So I cannot say it enough. Keep that content loop spinning. Create, publish, amplify, listen, and then iterate. And I can, like, iterate, iterate, iterate. We iterate endlessly, and I'm gonna show you a couple examples of iterating here. So we do a series called Motivation Monday. It was originally developed for Instagram and has since made its way on a lot of platforms, right? It's the quote images. We all know these do super well. I've seen so many different presenters in the past 2 days talk about the power of quotes. So we actually analyzed our quotes, and we found something really interesting. If we use the word children in a quote, which you can imagine being Teach for America, about half of our quotes have the word children, we get, just to keep it easy for the purpose of this conversation, about 1,000 likes. If we use the word teacher, student, we get about 4,000 likes. The more in our lane we are, the more our audience responds to it. So we now really go out of our way to find quotes that use the word teacher or student, because we know that we get a better audience engagement for it, that it means something to our audience. And we just figured this out by analyzing it. And we almost didn't think to analyze it because it's always some of our best content every week. But I think even with your best, take a look, because somewhere in your best, some stuff is rising to the top in front of it. One of the big changes on my team this past year was that we brought paid ads in-house and stopped the relationship with the agency we had been using. And I want to just talk to you a little bit about some. These are two ads. They all start out the same. We did a lot of A-B testing. Every time we release an ad, we A-B test it. We get a winner. We A-B test it again. We never stop our A-B testing. Now, what I have up here on the screen is an A to Z test because I wanted to talk through multiple iterations at once. But these ads are probably about 20 pieces apart. So I wanted to sort of talk through our learnings because I think this really speaks to we use our content loop everywhere, paid ads included. So if you look at these two images, the gal on the left, right, two females in classrooms leading the classroom. The goal of the ad was really to show somebody as a leader in the front, in charge. The gal on the left, a little more hesitant, a little more side eyes, looking off, right? The gal on the right, confident to camera, smiling. The gal on the right just totally won really quickly. So initially looked kind of similar to us, but the more we got into it and the more we saw the insights, the less well the gal on the left started performing. It was really interesting to watch. And we started with the image. We kept everything the same and started with the image because as we learned, if anybody said in the Facebook session earlier about optimizing your ads, image first. Image is what makes you stop scrolling through the timeline. The next thing we looked at was the call to action. So sign up to learn more was the winning call to action from the previous year, which is why we kicked off with it. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, there's something really wonky about this. Like, what am I signing up to learn more about? We switched it to learn about teaching and immediately saw a jump in our conversion rates. Like, we just clarified it for our audience. We made it much more useful. One of the next things we did, so the copy on the left reads, I'm sorry, it's really blurry. Teach for 2 years in a low-income community, empower students to build a better future. And the copy on the right reads, Teach for America finds, trains, and places outstanding people as teachers in 52 regions. So as we were sort of working on the Facebook ads and fine-tuning them, I noticed that the copy, finds, trains, and places outstanding leaders, people as leaders in 52, that one, the one that is much more specific about who Teach for America is and what Teach for America does, and it involves less of the inspirational language we had developed, was doing really well on LinkedIn and some of our LinkedIn ads. And I said, oh, well, that copy is much clearer. Like, if you're really at an introductory stage to who's Teach for America, do I want to teach for them? Like, that's actually what you need to know to maybe get that first engagement of learning about teaching. So I tried it out on Facebook and, again, saw a huge jump. And then we just cleaned up, again, the stuff underneath because it was too much information and they were at the wrong line of the pipe. So what's really interesting is the more we kept this content loop spinning and doing our A-B testing, the ad on the right actually brought in about half of our leads this season, and Facebook ended up featuring us as a business success story because of the ad on the right. But interestingly, the ad on the right really started as the ad on the left. So we really kept turning that loop over and over and over again. Okay. So your audience always knows what your audience wants because social media is one giant focus group. Our audience wants us to know that teaching is sometimes like winning the Super Bowl, and their engagement data told us so. So to get what your audience wants, your job is to create, publish, amplify, listen, iterate, and create again. And I'm just going to, that is actually the end of my presentation, so I'm going to open it up for questions, but I'm going to leave it on this slide because I see a couple people, I think, maybe taking photos.
Okay, Stacy, you know the drill. You all know the drill. I'm going to pass the mic around. Our first hand on the right-hand side. This room is a little small. It's a little bit of a maze, so please be patient with me as I walk over to you.
Thank you. On your slide where you had the children versus teacher and student quotes, you said the children's slide image got 1,000 likes and the other one got 4,000 likes. What tool did you use to determine that? How did you analyze that?
That's a great question. I believe we did that analysis by hand. I don't know about you guys, and if anybody has solved for this, please grab me afterwards. I find that no one tool does absolutely everything I would like it to do, and often the stuff I really want could be done by a pivot table in Excel. So I am blessed that I am not a one-man band. Yeah. And because I'm not a one-man band, This project that totally changed the game for us on our most popular piece of content was a starter project that we assigned to somebody new on my team who was really looking to get their feet wet in analytics. And I was like, you know, it might be really interesting to look at our Motivation Monday data, see if you find anything. I was like, it's really content that's meant to be well-liked, so look at the likes. And she just made an Excel spreadsheet and tracked all the data, and she had these like huge findings. So after she looked at, I think, a year's worth of posts, so 52, you know, she pulled out the top five and the bottom five and some in the middle, and we put them on a wall. We printed them out and put them on a wall, because once you're looking at them all, it like suddenly becomes so clear when you're not flipping screens. Which would actually maybe be one of my best tips. We do that sometimes with ads when we're looking at, like, this ad drops you to this landing page, which drops you into an email nurture stream so that you get this email. Like, we sometimes tape them all on the wall just to make sure the story is consistent, because your user is seeing all these pieces. And it's amazing how many times when you tape it up, it actually, you find really quickly, you're like, this piece doesn't look like it belongs. It's like that Sesame Street song, like, one of these things is not like the others. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, question in the middle here.
Question about content. How many people on your team are responsible for producing it, and how much time are they spending on like producing micro stuff versus larger campaign content?
That is a great question. Okay, so the micro content, there's one person on my team responsible for that. So there is one guy on my team responsible for all of the day-to-day stuff. When we look at the, and he talks, if you're talking purely social media, and he spends a lot of time talking to the website editorial team about what's up and coming. So when they publish something that we consider like everyday or evergreen or not part of a larger campaign, but that's just meant to keep the content engine spinning, they send him a link and he makes the magic happen. And we have a different strategy for every single social platform. So we treat our Facebook audience different than we treat our Instagram audience, different than our LinkedIn audience. So depending on what they write, he knows where it goes, and like that sort of at this stage more or less seamlessly happens. When we get into the campaign space, we get access to the creative team, so an in-house design team. The video team is involved in that stage, although the video team is starting to develop social videos because video is becoming the future. And those end up being much harder to produce because you end up with so many more cooks in the kitchen. And it depends on what team brought us that campaign, how many hands we get on that campaign. So a campaign that gets requested by the recruitment team, because recruitment is essentially our bread and butter, like if we don't recruit a new core of teachers next year, Teach for America doesn't exist. Like that gets a lot of hands, that gets a lot of resources, versus a campaign brought by our alumni team might get far less. That's not the specific answer you're getting. Overall, I would say there's 11 people on the digital content team alone, which says nothing of the creative team. So we are really blessed with a ton of resources. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to sneak in a question while I don't see a hand up. Stacy, when you were on my podcast, you told a story about a teacher who wrote a blog post about his approach to teaching across the whole family tree. I'm really tempted to tell everybody just go listen to that podcast, but even though I still want you to do that, you want to share that story?
I would love to share that story. You should all go listen to that podcast, and if Bernie ever invites you to be a guest on his podcast, you should say yes, because it is an exceptionally fun experience. So we had a teacher in Houston, and he won an award for being an alumni teacher, but he won the award for student achievement and what the students in his classroom were achieving. And we started talking to him about his theory of teaching, and he said to the head of the alumni, he said, well, my theory of teaching is that I teach for the cycle. And she's like, oh, that's interesting. I've never heard of that. Like, what is teaching for the cycle? And he said, teaching for the cycle is when you teach every sibling in a family. That you really understand kids, that you can't teach without it being a family commitment, and that parents need to help and communities need to help. And it's so valuable to be able to say to somebody, hey, I remember when your brother was in my class. I know that your dad works nights. Like, I have a history with your family that it makes meaning of it. So he wrote this great blog about winning the award, but he really told the story of teaching for the cycle. We put it on Facebook. It went crazy bonkers. With other members of our audience writing in stories about like, oh yeah, I've taught siblings too. Here's my experience teaching siblings. It's really special. So, you know, in the back of our head, our takeaway from that was like, oh, write more stories about teaching siblings. But the other takeaway from this is that Craig Bradenburg, who wrote it, is very special because about 3 months later, I was at a Teach for America conference, an internal teaching conference where we train teachers in its professional development. And Craig was speaking, and I was live tweeting a session, but I had Radian open, and I noticed that Radian is going through the roof, that tweets from Craig's session are going bonkers, and I didn't know it was Craig. They weren't tagging his Twitter handle because he didn't have much of a Twitter presence, but people kept saying Teach for the Cycle. That I was at this conference with one of the members of our editorial team, and I sent him a quick text being like, I think it's Craig. Is it Craig's session? Can you go find out if it is? Can you do a quick Q&A? So he went running literally like across this convention center. It was Craig's session. He did a quick Q&A. We put it up. It was, again, a wildly popular piece of content because at this point, Craig had come up with a new idea. He was going for a grand slam, which is teaching the children of a former student. So Craig's, the popularity of this post got Craig invited to be the moderator and a speaker at our 25th anniversary summit, and he actually told the story in front of 15,000 people at the Verizon Center in this past February to wild applause. So it's Craig and teaching siblings combined is the secret sauce there.
I want to know if anybody else is getting goosebumps on that story. Is that an awesome story? Any other questions for Stacy while we have her? Yes.
Do you guys do anything special for Teacher Appreciation Week?
We do. Teacher Appreciation Week is next week. We are. We have multiple audiences that we want to consider in that. We know that the donor audience actually tends to get a little bit of a spike during Teacher Appreciation Week because they start thinking about all those teachers that they appreciate, and it's why they are our donors anyways. So we have a donor loyalty campaign going. In addition, we know that Teacher Appreciation Week tends to bring out the pride of the parents of, we call teachers in our program core members, the pride of the parents of our core members, that the parents of our core members will come in mass to our Facebook page to leave a note about how proud they are of their child for taking on this commitment for 2 years. So we actually, for the first time ever, have a small campaign we're gonna launch specifically for those parents, which I'm really excited about because I think it really speaks to an audience need we hadn't previously thought of. And then there's our teacher audience. So our biggest post of the year in our teacher audience is we put up a deals and discounts during Teacher Appreciation Week where we basically just compile all the deals that everybody else has offered up everywhere else. So basically every vendor is gonna give like Sam's Club and Walmart and Dick's Sporting Goods and Target. Everyone will give an extra discount if you show your teacher ID during that week. So we will compile a list of all the discounts. Again, like a really useful resource, but that we know will get shared like crazy. And we have a whole bunch of special teacher content otherwise coming that week, but it is one of our biggest weeks for traffic.
I mean, it's such an emotional topic because I think we all probably have stories, you know, with people that have kids. You know, one that comes to my mind is my son's second grade teacher made such a point of knowing the students in her class that she even went to like my son's Little League game because she just wanted, you know, to create that connection. And he goes back every year for open house to see that teacher. And I think everyone probably has a special teacher story. And I'm sure you profile stories like that that, you know, are heartwarming.
I know, but every time I hear one, I have goosebumps now, right? Could you imagine your teacher showing up at your second grade Little League game? My God.
Chill bumps again. All right, any other questions? We still have a few minutes, so if you have any more questions for Stacy.
You had your North Star up there, and to keep it spinning, how often do you reuse the same content, or is it always original? Do you always have them coming out with new creatives, or do you repurpose, or do you ever spin back out this something from a year ago? How do you manage that?
A little bit of all of the above. So one of the really interesting things that I care about a lot is really staying platform specific in our content, that when we develop a piece of content, we know where we're gonna promote it because I already said it and got a bunch of nods, but like different content works on LinkedIn than works on Facebook and on and on and on. So because of that, we produce a ton of content in any given week. So there's a lot of always new content coming, and then I think when it comes to some content we put out over and over again. So if we put up a new blog post, it's very likely that blog post will be trotted out on Twitter more than once. And that's true of anything we put out on Twitter. Like we duplicate tweets all the time. In terms of bigger content, sometimes we bring up old content and sometimes we don't. It depends on the piece. We're actually going to bring up, we actually have a story that we're going to trot out for Mother's Day that we produced for something else and realized it would be a good Mother's Day, so we didn't make something new for Mother's Day. It's the story of a daughter did our program, and the mother was so inspired by it, she applied and later did it. So they are both now Teach for America alums, the mother-daughter pair, but the mother was inspired by the daughter. So we're going to put that out for Mother's Day instead of making something new. So we often do look for, like, does this serve more than one purpose? Or will it feel new again, I think is the better question, too. Like, if we put it out again, will it feel fresh?
Stacey, thank you for inspiring our humanity bone and for sharing great professional insights and wisdom. Thank you, Stacey Jaffe, Teaching for America.